Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. That music, that particular music, means we're about to have a lot of fun. And we are about to have a lot of fun. That's our Weird Questions music. That means today is Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. And I've looked ahead, and there are lots of great weird questions coming up. Also, it's Propinquity Week here. We are concluding Propinquity Week here at Catholic Answers. Propinquity Week, where everybody, or almost there, I think everybody, came home, and Jimmy in studio with us. Jimmy Akin, welcome back.
Hey there, I'm weirdly here.
It is weird, yeah.
And I had a weird time coming here. As I was telling you before the show, my drive out from Arkansas, because I like road trips.
Yeah.
My drive out from Arkansas was pretty uneventful until the last 3 hours, and then I'm coming through Imperial County, about to get to San Diego County, and there's people who are not from here won't know it, but there's this big, huge mountainous area. It's sometimes called the Mountain Empire.
Yeah.
Out at the edge of San Diego County, you go from below sea level, which is where Imperial County is, to over, 4,000 feet in just a few miles.
It's like switchback. It's very hard driving.
And then you've got this long, slow down ramp.
Yeah.
And it's all rocky and mountainous and narrow. And so I never look forward to that part of the trip. I mean, it's beautiful, but I've got to drive it. So
yeah,
my
right.
hands do not come off the steering wheel during that. And so I'm heading up to the Hucumba Mountains, the Mountain Empire. And I see this dark on the road ahead of me. And I'm thinking, is that a rainstorm? I don't want to be in a rainstorm when I hit
up the
mountains. And so I'm getting to Ocotillo Wells, which is the last little town before you head up the mountains. And it turns out it's not a rainstorm. It's a dust storm. And it was the visibility. You could see these swaths of dust, blowing it, really intense winds. But these swaths of dust blowing across the highway, at times I could not see the car in front of me.
Yeah.
Sometimes I could just see the headlights. And so I'm thinking, well, this is great because the mountains will break up the wind a little bit. And when I get to the mountains, I won't have this issue. And there won't be dust up all in the mountains. So I'm feeling optimistic. Then I see lightning in the dust.
Somebody didn't want you to get
and,
here, Jimmy.
but I finally get through the dust storm, and I start the climb, and all of a sudden my phone says, severe thunderstorm area ahead, drive safely.
Perfect.
And so it's now, it's raining, I've got the, fortunately it wasn't raining so hard that that I had to slow to 20 miles an hour or anything, but I did slow down, and I'm watching all these other people whoosh past me.
Right.
And it's like,
Sometimes you see them go whoosh right off the side.
Yeah, so. It's like, I'm going to be safe.
Yeah.
And so I did slow down, but I've got lightning on both sides of me and severe winds rocking the truck and some rain. And so I had an eventful final leg of my journey.
Wow, that's very dramatic.
Yeah.
Conclusion getting back here. Well, we're really happy you're in the building. Everybody's excited that you're coming. I know that there's people here in this building that you haven't met.
There are, yeah. Also, you mentioned it's Propinquity Week, and I actually knew the word propinquity before Chris Check started using it.
I forget I saw you posted something to us about where you knew the word propinquity from, and I don't remember where it was now. I've forgotten.
Well, I don't know where I knew it from because it crops up periodically. In fact, I was reading something this week on the way out here. I was listening to an audiobook that used it. But what I shared with Chris is there's from a very early first season episode of The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he and his wannabe girlfriend, Zelda Gilroy, are in biology class together, and it's first time she's ever talked to him, But she tells him that they're going to end up together because she's Gilroy, he's Gillis. Their science classes are always seated alphabetically, so they're going to be together for the next number of years in biology class. And she says propinquity ends up breeding affection. And so I shared that. I found that clip, and I shared it with Chris, and then he shared it with the staff.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what our hope is, that propinquity will breed.
So you and I have propinquity now. We'll see if
affection gets breeded.
Of the friendship kind.
Thank you for the clarification. Jimmy Akin, our guest, weird questions this hour. And we'll start with Max. Max says this, let's suppose for a moment here that it is possible to either telepathically or psychokinetically link up to another person to the point of being able to affect their bodily motions. In other words, let's suppose that possessing other humans can be done. Let's suppose the host is a non-Christian and the possessor is Christian. If the possessor, while inside the host body, pilots them into going to confession and declares Christ as Lord and Savior, is that a conversion? And additionally, would this be permitted? Why or why not?
Okay, so I guess the first thing to mention is there is some evidence that human to human possession could take place because humans are spirits, angels are spirits, angels can clearly possess people, usually the bad ones, although there are reports of good angels sometimes possessing people, as in the case of Saint Miriam the Little Arab.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I'll talk about on a future Mysterious World. But there's also evidence. So what one spirit can do, like an angelic spirit, another spirit, like a human, could do in principle, maybe not as well.
Okay.
And there is actually evidence that in the history of Christianity that human spirits may sometimes possess other humans, at least after death.
Okay.
And so if it's possible after death, it might conceivably be possible in life, which is what Max seems to be envisioning. So let's just go with that.
Okay, we'll go with
I'm not claiming that happens, but we're within the ballpark of what might be possible. So would it count as a conversion if let's say you're not a Christian, so you're not baptized, you don't believe in Jesus, and then I possess you, and I am a Christian, I go to confession using your body, and I profess that Jesus is Lord and so forth, and then I leave your body.
Okay.
Would we say you had converted? No. Because you're back to being your normal non-Christian self.
Right.
And so it was not a conversion. It was me using you as a meat puppet. Now, there are a couple of ancillary, questions that are associated questions that are interesting here. One of them would be, what would happen if I got baptized while in your body? That is a question we don't have an answer to.
Yeah.
At least not, I'm not aware of any treatment of that. Another question would be, would my confession be valid? And here the answer is not certain, but there would be at least a basis for holding that it might be valid. The reason I say that is because confession is one of two sacraments, the other being matrimony, that is based on information exchange. You know, when you go to confession as a Catholic, you don't have to touch the priest. He doesn't have to touch you. There's no material that's exchanged between you. What's exchanged, it's not like he gives you communion or puts chrism on you.
Right.
What's exchanged is information. And there have been moral and pastoral theologians like Herbert Davis, one of the big manualists of the early 20th century after telephones had been invented, and the same thing came up during COVID too, but could you use validly telephones for confession. And there have been Catholic thinkers, both in the early 20th century and in the early 21st century, who've held that it could be valid. It's not licit to do it that way, mm-hmm. but it could be valid to do it that way because you're exchanging information. And even before telephones, there was discussion of could you do it through letters? You know, could you write out?
Yeah.
And even today, there will be people who are, let's say they're mute, and so they may write out their confession and hand it to the priest.
Yes.
And, okay, well, could you then put it in the letterbox, and he gets it out of the post box and so forth? And it looks to me like this being an information-based sacrament, there is a significant case to be made that it would be valid. So if I was possessing you
mm-hmm.
and you're a non-Christian and I go use your body as a communications tool to make my confession, it seems to me that the confession for me would be valid. It wouldn't have anything to do with you. You're just the messenger. You're like the person who hands the priest the letter.
Right.
But it looks to me like it would. There's an argument to be made that it would be valid. But if I'm possessing you, I better have a dang good reason or I'm going to need to confess that too.
Yeah, right. So don't possess people. Maybe Max saw the big Spider-Man movie this summer, which was about, I happen to see it, Jimmy.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen it.
It's about possession.
Okay. Does it have...
It doesn't have any of these things.
No. Does it have Venom in it?
No, Venom is not.
Oh, really?
No, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Because Venom is the most common possession thing in the Spider-Man orbit.
There's somebody who has a superpower who can jump into other people.
Oh, okay.
And then the other people become...
Like Jericho, only he's from DC Comics instead of Marvel Comics.
Yes, right. Exactly. Maybe Max... I don't know if that's where Max got the question. But Jimmy Akin, our guest... And we got about, carry the two, 1 million more weird questions for Jimmy to go right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN. To reach the world with the gospel message, EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, 24/7, television, radio, social media, and podcasts. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. That's not the usual music, is it? No, that's weird music because it's weird questions with Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, our guest this hour, but a propinquitous guest. I don't know. Can you turn propinquity into a
modifier? It's intelligible. I'm a descriptive grammarian, not a prescriptive one.
I appreciate that, Jimmy. Those prescriptive ones are... I find them irksome.
A lot of the little annoying rules, so-called rules in English grammar, were invented by this one guy who was like an Anglican clergyman in the 1700s, I think. And they were just his own personal ideas. And it's taken linguists centuries to strip those out of people's and just talk natural and don't worry about the stupid little rule. It was made up by this one guy.
I know. Often it does seem that the most fastidious wins in some situations, and you just got to fight back against that. All right. You know what I did want to ask you about?
Yeah.
Because this is Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin, and this is a general theme of this current stage of your career is that you are, and maybe it's always been the case, but you tackle all kinds of questions that other apologists don't tackle. Mm-hmm. And you do it in a way that that secular media wouldn't do it either. So Jimmy Yankee's Mysterious World, super popular podcast. And what's been happening over there, Jimmy Yankee's Mysterious World?
So this is coming out this Friday, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, last Friday on Jimmy Yankee's Mysterious World, we had an episode on shared death experiences.
Oh, yeah.
These are ones where someone is maybe dying, but is at least having a near-death experience, and someone else perceives what's going on in that experience. So it's kind of a participatory thing. And this is a new, near-death experiences themselves have only been carefully studied since 1975, and shared death experiences are even more recent, but they do happen, and so we talk about those. And this Friday, so today when this episode airs, we're talking about a UFO contactee. He wasn't born in the Ozarks, but he moved to the Ozarks. His name was Buck Nelson. And he lived back in the 1950s, like a lot of UFO contactees. He was actually from Colorado, but he moved to southern Missouri, to the Ozarks, and he claimed to have some very interesting encounters with aliens, including an alien dog that was like 385 pounds and shook hands like a man. And
that's an awesome description.
Yeah. And he's got a really wild story. And late in the show, I reveal something about what the aliens were interested in that will really surprise humans.
Okay.
Really, it's a big, really? The aliens care about that?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
A fun one. All right. Check out Jimmy Yankee's Mysterious World. Wherever you get your podcast, you can go to Jimmy's YouTube page. And also mysterious.fm. If you haven't listened to them, you've got hundreds of fun episodes in front of you. All right. Well, weird questions today here with Jimmy. And this one comes from Will. Mm-hmm. At last, someone I know will deal with my weird question. Oh, did I skip one? I skipped one. I'll go back to the other one after this, Jimmy. Sorry.
Okay.
On the show Lost, are the baptisms performed on the island by Father Elko, in quotes?
Is it?
Yeah, Eco.
It's Eco.
Oh, I apologize.
I've seen enough Lost to know that.
Sorry. Added an L. Sorry, Father. Father Eco, are they valid? The usual desert island scenario does not quite cover it. Eco is not a priest, but is only impersonating one. And neither of the baptized was in imminent danger of death, although Charlie thought so on the basis of a dream, but survived at least into season 5. Okay, very good, Will. Thank you.
Okay, so now this is like a 20-year-old show or something at this point, and it's already been spoiled here that that Father Eco is not a real priest. There's another spoiler that doesn't come, and I haven't seen all of Lost yet, but even I know the final spoiler of the series that allegedly explains the whole thing, but maybe doesn't.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to answer this as carefully as I can. But assuming that all these characters are living human beings on an island, baptism is one of two sacraments. The other is matrimony that does not require a specially ordained minister. Now, when you read various treatments of baptism, like in catechism or in popular Catholic books, it'll frequently say something like anybody can baptize in an emergency circumstance. And that's true, but the emergency circumstance isn't needed for validity. They put that in because they don't want untrained laity just baptizing people willy-nilly with no emergency.
Okay.
They want the laity to know, yes, you can do this, but we don't want you doing it all the time. We want someone who's qualified, who's been trained about, like, has this person met the requirements for baptism, you know, right, and so forth. And it's also, there's also an appropriateness to having an ordained minister do it. But it's not required. So if Father Eco is a living human being, It doesn't matter whether he's a priest or not. He can baptize someone. And, you know, provided the person he's baptizing is also a living human being and consents to be baptized, yep, it's going to be a valid baptism. There's something shady about it if he's tricking people into thinking he's a priest.
Right.
But that is not going to affect the validity of the baptism. So the baptisms would be valid. But there's another complication dealing with the season 6 spoiler, which I'm not going to get into, except to say that even if there's something in season 6, the final season of Lost, that would prevent these baptisms from being valid, they would still count as baptisms of desire.
Okay.
And there's a little more to be said there, but I can't say it without getting into spoilerific territory. So if Will would like to know more, he can write in and we'll deal with other aspects of this question on a future Weird Question show.
But Will, thank you very much. I feel like I'm taking knowledge away from, like, question number one, I learned don't possess people. Question number two, don't baptize willy-nilly. I feel like every question is coming with a lesson today.
I'm glad this is useful.
It's very helpful to me. This one comes from Todd. I know this will be speculation, but do we have any proof one or the other, one, I guess it's one way or the other, whether the Holy Spirit used one of Mary's eggs so there would be a DNA connection between them? Or is the
Her and Jesus?
Yeah. Or is there a general understanding that the Holy Spirit implanted an embryo in her, independent of her DNA? Thank you, Todd.
So this question, you might think there's just going to be an easy answer in the historical sources, and at least I might think that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually not. And if you think about it for a minute, the reasons would become clear, like DNA. So DNA was discovered in the mid-1800s, and its double helix nature was then discovered in the mid-1900s, and its function was discovered somewhere in between. But it's a real recent scientific discovery, and scientific discoveries tend not to find their way into magisterial documents that quickly. The church tends to, like, let's stay with what we know and we'll let science settle over time. We're not going to rush into endorsing some scientific idea. Like, what have we discovered? Here's this DNA. We think it has something to do with heredity. We think it's the basis of heredity. But then 30 years later, we find out that's not true.
Yeah.
So the church is not going to comment on things that deal with scientific matters that closely, and not that quickly. So there isn't actually anything in the historical sources that magisterial ones that addresses the DNA question. You may find that in some theologians, where it's a matter of opinion, but not in magisterial teachings. And so I want to give Todd the most reliable answer I can, which would be magisterial rather than theological.
Right, right.
Now, what you will find in magisterial documents going way back is an affirmation of Jesus's true humanity and his membership in the human race. Now, you would think in modern terms, that would mean he has DNA, and I'm sure that he did. But did some of that DNA have to come from Mary? Not to be a human. Lots of people aren't descended from Mary, and they're human.
Yeah.
They're members of the human family. So could God have, like, come up with a genetic code on his own and implant it in an embryo and then implant that embryo into Mary, or zygote technically, implant the zygote into Mary and let it develop without her giving any contribution to it? Hypothetically, that could be possible. God can do anything that doesn't involve a logical contradiction. That doesn't involve a logical contradiction. So I would say God could do that. But moving down from the magisterial level to the theological level, one of the things we do have is a lot of theological opinion from theologians like Thomas Aquinas, for example, who would say that Mary did contribute to Jesus. They'll frame it, they didn't have the concept of DNA, but they'll frame it in terms of blood. And they'll say Mary, because it was believed the mother contributes blood to the child, which mothers actually do. You know, that's how they get their nutrients and their oxygen through the umbilical cord. But you have a lot of theologians saying that Mary contributed to him in the form of blood. And you could extend that principle to modern DNA. So I would say there's a strong theological opinion that would hold that Mary did contribute DNA to Jesus. It hadn't been validated, as far as I'm aware, on the magisterial level, but it is strongly grounded in Catholic opinion, and I would favor that. I would tend to, that would be my understanding, is that Mary did contribute DNA to Jesus, and God then supplied the additional DNA that was needed to have a full human genetic code for Jesus.
Excellent weird question, Todd, and lots more great weird questions to come. Jimmy Akin is our guest. He's in studio with us, so we're having extra fun today. We'll do more of it right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Why do we baptize? Does it really do anything? In Baptism Now Saves You, Dr. Carlo Broussard explains the unbreakable relationship between baptism and salvation, making sense of the Church's teachings in a way that is easy to understand and ready to share. St. Peter said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you." Discover what that means today. Order your copy of Baptism Now Saves You at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live, Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. And Jimmy here in studio with us. Lots and lots of great weird questions. So on we go. I really like this name. Jaeger Vom Abilene wants to know. I got one. Oh, I got one. Oh, I see what he means. I got a weird question. I got one. I saw an interview with Giorgio A. Tsoukalos, the ancient alien theorist on National Geographic YouTube. He claimed dozens of alien species have been with humanity for millions of years. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed not by the wrath of God, but by a UFO. Tsoukalos and other co-working theorists hold to the idea that we were visited by aliens during the pyramid era, For example, Tsoukalo says that the Aztecs have carvings saying they saw huge giant snakes flying thousands of years ago, flying planes, or floating turtles hovering over them, flying UFO discs.
Or Gamera.
That's exactly right. He claims it simply came down to misinterpreted technology from aliens for their lack of better words and explanations of what they saw, and therefore calling them gods. This makes a lot of sense to me. Is it blasphemous to think or call God the Father and his angels aliens? What do you think about this misinterpreted technology?
Okay, so there's two questions there. The first one, is it blasphemous to think of God or call God an alien? And what about his angels? Well, it wouldn't be blasphemy to call his angels aliens. The reason has to do with the nature of blasphemy. Blasphemy means to speak against. And in a religious context, blasphemy is understood commonly to mean speaking against God. And so if you're trash-talking his angels, well, that's not a good idea, but it wouldn't be blasphemy in the divine sense. I guess you could say it would be blasphemy in a lesser sense. Just like if I started spreading rumors about Cy Kellett, I would be blaspheming not God, I'd be speaking against Cy Kellett or blaspheming Cy Kellett, you know, which...
Like Edgar does.
You know, I know you're important, Cy, but, you know, you're not up on the God level.
No, so, I'm clear on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm clear on that.
Just want to make sure that's remembered.
Okay.
But to misunderstand and casually, irresponsibly assume that aliens, that angels are aliens, is something. It wouldn't be divine blasphemy, but it wouldn't be great. One of the reasons I say that is we actually have a warning against speaking against angelic beings in Scripture. If you read, for example, the book of Jude, and this isn't the only place, but if you read the book of Jude, and, you know, 2 Peter deals with similar themes and so forth, it talks about how even when Michael was disputing over the body of Moses with the devil, he wouldn't rebuke the devil himself. Instead, he said, "May the Lord rebuke you." And he left that to God rather than, as it's translated in some English versions, rather than revile an angelic majesty.
Yeah.
So we have warnings against trash-talking angelic beings, whether they're demonic or angelic, you know, good or bad. So I would say now, if someone's honestly mistaken and thinks that God is an alien or that... you know, aliens impersonated God, you know, like on Stargate, you know, that's what the Goa'uld do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they impersonate gods. Or if one thought the same thing about angels, well, God knows you're sincerely mistaken. The thing that I would be worried about is being casually mistaken, where you don't take this concept seriously enough, because I would say you are responsible if you just casually say, oh, that seems like a good idea, and just go with it when it deals with fundamentally important things like God.
Yeah.
You're being irresponsible in your belief formation. So before I credited any such claim, I would want to know a few things. The first one is, what's the evidence here?
Mm-hmm.
Superficial similarities do not indicate identity. There are lots of things in this world that are superficially similar that are not identical. For example, a European swallow and an African swallow. You know, they may look similar. They may that's why they're both called swallows. They may live in the same hemisphere. They're not North American swallows. They may have similar unladen airspeeds, but they are not the same thing.
Yes.
And so just because you can say, oh, here's some alien explanation for something that the Bible presents as a miracle, there's a similarity there, but that doesn't mean that they're the same thing.
No.
So you need, in order to propose an alien interpretation for biblical events, you need actual evidence, not just let's armchair it around and talk about sacred things as if we can just casually propose anything we want.
Right.
I could propose non-alien things. I could say, oh, it's time travelers. It's humans from the future who bombed Sodom and Gomorrah with a nuclear bomb or something like that. But you know what that would have the result of is there would be radioactive isotopes, some of which would not have decayed yet, in the vicinity of Sodom and Gomorrah. So that would be a testable prediction. So where are the testable predictions for the alien idea that Yeager reports Giorgio Tsoukalos proposing? Let's have actual evidence. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of speculative jawboning with no evidential backbone. Then there's a second problem I have, which is even if there were alien, even if you had some evidence that some of these biblical events or other historical events, like, you know, the pyramids and things, were had alien involvement, none of that gets you up to the concept of God. Mm-hmm. God, as he is understood by Christians, is an infinite, uncreated being with infinite perfections. And there might be some pretty impressive aliens that might have been regarded as gods by, you know, less technologically developed humans. But none of them are infinite, uncreated beings who produced matter from nothing. None of them can do that. And even when you have people like, I don't want to say his name wrong, so I won't say it, but you've had proposals, I want to say Lawrence Krauss, who proposed like a universe from nothing.
Yeah.
When you carefully investigate what he means by nothing, it's not nothing.
Right.
It's a quantum foam. And that's not the same thing as nothing. So nobody knows any way to produce something truly from nothing. So even if aliens could create a universe from quantum foam, that is not the same thing as producing a universe from nothing. And none of these proposals get us into the territory of what Christians actually worship as God. So I would say they're misguided, speculative, and frankly sloppy and lazy. And if you want me to take the proposal seriously, well, the burden's on you to show me some evidence, more than just jawboning about it.
I have to say, I feel a little disappointed that National Geographic would have this. This seems below them.
There's a surprising amount on the National Geographic channel and on the History Channel that you think would be below them, but
apparently is not.
Yeah, they have yet to plumb the bottoms of how low they can go. It's like playing that game Limbo.
Yeah, right.
You know, where you shimmy under the bar.
Yeah, they keep shimmying lower and lower.
Lower and lower.
Yeager, thank you very much for the question. That'll take us to our break. Jimmy Akin is our guest. It's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. And each question gets a reasonable hearing from Jimmy. He doesn't. He's not dismissing any questions as foolish or unworthy of being answered. But he's going to apply both faith and reason to his answers. So more of that coming up right after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, when we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue. Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
to Mary, the Mother of God, for help bearing witness to the gift of life with the National Life Rosary. Designed exclusively for EWTN, the unique centerpiece and crucifix represent the reality that all life is sacred and begins at conception. Help build a culture of life with the National Life Rosary. Available now at EWTNRC.com. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Jimmy's latest book is Evidence for Christ, How We Know That Jesus is the Messiah. You want to examine the evidence? A great book for examining the evidence. Or maybe you want to have the evidence at your fingertips to share with other people. Either way, get it wherever you get your books, including at our store, shop.catholic.com.
So before we go back to questions...
Oh, boy, here we go.
I see you've got here on the table between us several different little plastic animals.
Yes, these are my little plastic animals.
Plastic kangaroo that's
green. I got
green.
A green kangaroo.
You've got a plastic sheep. You've got a plastic questing beast.
Questing beast? Is that what you call that?
Yeah.
This is called a questing beast? I've often called it a giraffe. But
well, that's what the questing beast was in Arthurian legend.
Oh,
I've got a whole mysterious world about it.
I remember the giraffe. Okay, so that's, I got you. The questing beast, yeah.
And you've got a big cat of some sort. It looks like a puma, but it's got a handful of little spots on it.
Yes.
But you've got this little menagerie going here. And, oh, maybe that's a llama, not a sheep.
I bet that's what a llama. I was thinking. I was going to say llama, and then I was like, did I think all this time that was a llama? Okay, that's a llama.
It's too thin to be a sheep. So, okay, so you got this little menagerie going. It's almost like you're building an ark. So
is there something?
Well, we got cloning technology now.
That's true. Yeah, we don't even need to anymore, do we?
Yeah,
you can build half the ark and accomplish the same thing.
So and they're tiny creatures, so they'll all fit on the ark.
Yeah,
and then you can expand them up to normal size later. Now I can see where there would be some genetic differences, like if that's a cheetah, it doesn't have enough spots, and your kangaroo is green.
Yeah,
but if we're ever inundated by a tiny plastic flood, then it seems like you're all set up for that.
I am. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just happy to hear that you can see them. I didn't know other people could see my animals, but
you were afraid you were hallucinating.
I was afraid that I've seen them there for a long time, but I wasn't sure. Did no one ever mentions it? No one ever brings it up. I actually put them there in part just to play with the people on YouTube. I thought they would comment on them. No one has ever commented on them.
Okay. So, I did that. I did something similar once.
Yeah.
When I first started my YouTube channel, and it was very primitive production standards at the time.
Uh-huh.
But when I first started my YouTube channel, I decided to embed a secret message in the channel that you had to be a regular watcher to notice. And so I got this stand-up transparent plastic picture frame.
Yeah.
And I printed this all out, and I had a large letter. It was on a piece of white paper, a letter H. And I put it in the picture frame, and I put the picture frame behind me on a bookshelf. And then every time I made a new video, I changed the letter.
Oh, no way!
And I never said anything about it, but people eventually did figure out I was spelling out the message, howdy, folks.
Oh, Jimmy, that's awesome. See, I think this is in the same general spirit of, and Big Stack will have to tell me, Big Stack monitors YouTube. Maybe somebody commented on it and I missed it, but I haven't seen a comment. So I wasn't sure that other people could see them.
Jim. Yeah. I notice things like that. And, you know, we're doing 2 hours of radio with you a week. Normally I'm looking through a monitor, but I would see the animals. I would see all the stuff you got here. I frequently, behind the scenes, refer to the current layout of the studio as the junk shop.
Yeah.
Because we've got all this obsolete technology. We've got an audio cassette. We have an old-fashioned radio. We've got an old-fashioned typewriter.
Yeah.
It's
like we're working our way through the ages of media here.
Yeah.
Up to, including sculpture. We've got some sculpture there.
Yeah.
But we also have Fulton Sheen over there.
Yeah, or this. Count Dooku.
I wasn't sure if you were going to say it.
One of the two.
He calls him Count Dooku because he looks like on the camera. I didn't know if you were going to say it. It's Fulton Sheen. It is not Count Dooku. All right, back to the weird questions. Oh, it's such a relief to know other people can see my animals. Patrick Abbott, 5442, wants to know this. Malachi Martin made some weird complaints about things allegedly happening in the Vatican. How credible was he?
Well, he's a rather polarizing figure. Now, a lot of the people, he's deceased now, you know, God rest his soul, and a lot of people don't know anything about him or who he was. A lot of people who encountered him late in life, particularly in traditional Catholic circles, had a lot of respect for him because he scratched where they itched. He would talk a lot about exorcism. He would talk a lot about conspiracies in the church. He would trash talk Vatican II or things that happened after Vatican II. And for a lot of people, that really scratched where they itched. So they tended to regard him very highly. But there's another side to Malachi Martin that a lot of these folks just are not aware of.
Okay.
Now, in terms of his credibility, I would say if you read his books, and I have read, you know, not all of them, but I've read some of them, there is some accuracy in them, but they're also unreliable. I would not rely on anything I could only source from Malachi Martin. He presents material as if it's fact that he could not possibly know, like what an inner person's thoughts were and conversations he was not present for and things like that. And he demonstrably is wrong on various things. And so I would say, yeah, there's some accurate stuff there, but he's fundamentally not reliable. William Peter Blatty, who people may remember as the author of The Exorcist, commented on Malachi Martin's exorcism book, Hostage to the Devil, by saying it was a fantasy written for profit.
Uh-huh.
And there is additional evidence that would support the idea that Malachi Martin was significantly profit-driven in a way he shouldn't have been. Among that evidence, he apparently claimed to have multiple doctorates that he did not have. You know,
well, that's not a good thing.
Not a good thing.
That's not a good sign.
But if you look at the trajectory of his career, now I'm not even getting into what happened like at Vatican II, where he was involved in a scandal and things like that. But even setting that aside, if you look at his post-Vatican II activity, he dramatically changed his views from in the 1970s, like in 1973. And I've got the book, you know, it's a real book where he is a liberal denying the second coming of Christ.
Oh.
You know, in 1973.
One of the central doctrines of the faith.
Yeah. And so he goes from being this theological liberal to this theological conservative over the course of his career without ever seeming to acknowledge his shift.
Oh, kind of a chameleon.
Yeah. And so the fact that he did that without doing a mea culpa and say, yeah, it was the 70s and I was, you know, I had all these post-Vatican II ideas and I was just a crazy person and now I've settled down and thought better of things. He didn't do an intellectual mea culpa so far as I can tell. And that would also suggest opportunistic evolution on his part, that he was trying to figure out where he could make money without having to do the kinds of things an honest person would do in such shifts.
Yeah. All right. Well, Patrick, I hope that that's helpful to you. Thank you very much for the question. The next one comes from Familiar Galaxy 9.
And familiar is spelled in an unfamiliar way.
I know. I was trying to figure out if there was some secret meeting.
Familiar with an A, but it's familiar with an I.
It's not a family group, it's a Fimley group.
Yeah.
What does the theory of relativity add or detract from the Galilei-Newton system of coordinates? Mm-hmm. Was it just factoring in light speed? I'm reading through the theory now, and I don't even get the difference between general and specific relativity.
Okay, so let's see if I can explain this in a quick way, because we've only got a few minutes. So in Newtonian physics, which is the same kind of physics that Galileo was using, at least the same worldview, Newton is later than Galileo, but they're broadly working within the same scientific paradigm, or at least Newton took the paradigm that was around in Galileo's day and then advanced it mm-hmm. to its next major step. And in Newtonian physics, space and time are immutable. So they don't warp, they don't stretch and contract and stuff like that. And they, so you have this, you can conceptualize things using a standard Cartesian grid. Mm-hmm. And locate and use that as a frame of reference and locate events in that grid. There is also, in Newtonian physics, there's no upper speed limit for physical objects that are moving.
Uh-huh.
They could go infinitely fast. Relativity, now subsequent to Newton, the speed of light was measured. And it was actually done earlier than a lot of people realize. It wasn't something we discovered in the 20th century. We knew what light speed was, I mean, approximately, earlier, because we could measure it using, for example, the orbits of the moons that of Jupiter that Galileo had discovered.
That's genius.
So
genius.
So we knew what the speed of light was. And what Einstein realized, and this is the central insight in his relativity, is that the speed of light is a constant for all observers. That means something really strange. But to give an illustration, let's suppose I'm on a train going down a train track, and you're standing next to the train watching me go by.
Yes.
On okay. the train. And I've got a flashlight, and I point it forwards in the direction I'm moving on the train, and I turn the flashlight on. I, moving on the train, let's say the train's going 90 miles an hour, which is really fast for a train. But I'm going 90 miles an hour, and I turn on the beam of light in my flashlight, I'm going to see it go 186,000 miles per second. That's the speed of light.
Right.
The train is moving with me, so I just see it doing its normal light speed, 186,000 miles per second. You, standing next to the train, see the train moving 90 miles an hour, and I've got the flashlight turned on, you would think that what you would see watching it
would be 90 miles an hour faster.
It would be 90 miles an hour faster.
Right.
But you won't. You'll see the same 186,000 miles per second that I see.
Wow.
So the speed of light is a constant for all observers. And that means that time is running different for me on the train than it is for you standing by. Also, space is going to be slightly, it's too little for us to notice, but space is going to be slightly distorted too. So space and time are not absolutes. And there is no universal frame of reference like that Cartesian grid that I mentioned. Instead, you've got to specify what frame of reference are you assuming.
Whoa,
for purposes of a discussion. That is the central insight of the theory of relativity. What the results are going to be is relative to the frame of reference you pick. Hence, it's called relativity. Now, there are two major theories of relativity that Familiar Galaxy was asking about, general and specific, or special relativity. Special relativity deals with frames of reference that do not involve acceleration or gravity. So like on my train, it's moving 90 miles an hour. It's constant speed. Yeah. It's not accelerating.
Right.
General relativity takes special relativity and lifts those requirements. No gravity, no acceleration. So in general relativity, you can add gravity, like maybe we're right next to a black hole. Or you can add acceleration, like maybe the train isn't going an even 90 miles an hour. Maybe it's accelerating at 0.00000.1% the speed of light. So general relativity adds acceleration and gravity into the basics of special relativity.
I think the world was made for you, Jimmy Akin. It's weird. It's a weird it world. Is.
We haven't even talked quantum mechanics yet.
I don't want to. We'll be right back. More Weird Questions for Jimmy Akin after this.